Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money, 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 money.
Dollar, dollar. Dollar, dollar. Ching, ching, bling, bling. Got to chatter. You ain't talking money, then you're talking no matter. Ching, ching, bling, bling. Patting pockets.
Remind everyone that this podcast is on the IB Sports podcast feed. You can find that podcast network on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. Please be sure to subscribe to be notified of all podcasts from the IB Network. We would also appreciate if you would rate and review this network 5 stars. Finally, you can follow IB Sports on Twitter, Instagram, or join the Facebook group. The Facebook group does have a premium membership that allows you to post without it being approved by an admin, levy fines. You can be commissioner for a day, receive free gambling picks from the guys on this podcast, and much, much more. And with that, the backdoor cover is back. IB Sports Weekly Gambling Podcast. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, as always, no matter what he says, the gambling professor, Alan, a.k.a. IB Yeezus. What's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Just licking my wounds from last week.
We can't win them all, man.
I know, but I was literally one stroke away from a 7-1 on was it Eric Van Rooyen? I think I had him top 20 to finish top 20 at 7-1, and he shot 3 over in the last round, and everybody was doing so bad that somehow he moved up to the 22nd or 23rd spot. And if he had a shot 2 over for the entire tournament, he would have been, I think, top 15, but he shot 3 over, and he was like 23rd, so I didn't get that either.
Yeah, Matthew Wolf was one of several guys who made a really big charge. Well, basically, he had a horrible tournament for 3 rounds, mm-hmm. and then he had a good round and was under par on Sunday, and I think he jumped up like 40-something spots just on the last day. So it was a bloodbath. I think I sent you the pin sheet, right? Jack Nicklaus was obviously not very happy with some of the comments that he had seen and heard from some of the players.
Yeah, I'm not a golfer, but I mean, looking at the pin sheet that you sent me, like even on a video game, I feel like that would have been
exactly. Yep, it was ridiculous. And then also, I apologize that we did not get a podcast up last week. That was completely on me. I had some personal stuff going on. And then just in typical fashion, I sent Alan Thursday morning right as the tournament started that I love John Rahm this week, a member in our group who always sends and asks some picks. I sent on Wednesday and said I would take John Rahm out of the favorites for sure to win. And, you know, you can't take credit for it because it's not on a podcast. So that's on me. Hopefully we'll continue to give winners, because I think if I would have been, on the podcast and we would have said that, I think that would be 6 out of 9 weeks we've given a winner, which that's pretty good odds. It's a pretty incredible run. But today we're going to do just a little bit of baseball, which is going to be mostly Alan because I don't know enough about it, to be honest. And then we're going to do a 3M Open preview, which is this week's event on the PGA Tour. So for those that don't know, Major League Open Day is Thursday, correct? That is right, right,
Adam? Yes, it'll be okay. Thursday.
So they're going to have 2 games to start the new season. I have seen some of the preseason games this week, which I got to admit, it's really weird. I did not like the Mets, who had the cardboard cutouts of fans. That was kind of creepy. I did like them piping in the crowd noise. We've talked about that before from the soccer games, because it's just awkward when it's just, you know, dead silence. So I did like they were doing that. Another thing that I didn't know till recently, did you know about all the rule changes? I mean, I knew about the DH. I did not know about the relief pitchers.
I haven't looked up all the rule changes yet. I know that they were going to do the universal DH. I think that got voted on pretty quickly.
Yep.
And I'm actually all aboard on that. I mean, I was on board for that rule change a long time ago for the simple fact that I've seen enough instances of pitchers pulling hamstrings or having freak accidents. And the arm is so valuable. You don't really need them on base. And as a Braves fan, trust me, I appreciate a hitting pitcher through and through. But at the end of the day, I think it's better for the game if we let hitters hit, basically. And I don't think a lot of pitchers are going to complain. I think Zach Greinke might complain, and then maybe a couple other ones. But mean, you'll find some days where maybe they might get in, like Madison Bumgarner. He might get in to actually hit. You know, you never know how some of these games go sometimes. But yeah, I know that there was going to be some nuances that they had switched up a little, but I haven't gotten into that just yet, which will be important when we start talking about, you know, the spreads and the totals and things like that. But for the purpose of this podcast, I just focused on what I think my approach is going to be for futures, and just, I guess, give out some information on how I go about betting baseball. And it honestly, it's, there's so much information on baseball statistics, and the splits is one of the most informative sports that we have when it comes to advanced stats. And I would say if people like to bet golf, or they're good at betting golf, baseball is probably right up your alley too, because they keep statistics pretty much in the same manner. Like it's very in depth.
So just so you know, because I actually found these out today, two of the rules that I was not aware of, and I think they're going to change the game, you know, pretty significantly. The first is that now a pitcher must at least, if they are brought in relief, at least pitch a inning or finish the inning, or they cannot come out. So if you bring in a reliever, say with one out, and they start getting rocked, they have to finish that inning before they can come out of the game, which I'm all for from just as a fan perspective. I'm tired of how long baseball games take. They're too slow. It's part of why I've kind of fallen off in the last decade of just watching baseball in general. The other one that was interesting is now when a game goes to extra innings, they will start with a runner on second base.
Yeah, I didn't think they approved that.
I hate that.
I think that's stupid. Is it still going to be sudden death? I haven't looked at it, honestly.
It is. Yes, yeah, it is. It's you start off with a guy on it's one inning. Both, you know, teams get in a bat.
I know. I just don't like it. Extra inning baseball is probably the most interesting part of baseball. I don't think you need that to speed that up per se, but I guess in the last, what, 3 or 4 years, we have seen some games go 16, 17, and things like that. Yeah, so actually, it's really not a lot of them, but it does happen enough, I guess, that people want it to be done. I'm aware of the platooning, the anti-platooning is what I would call it, rule, where they're trying to basically keep people from using lefties against lefties, and then just putting them in the face one bat and taking them out type thing. I actually think that would be good for the game, to speed it up, to make it more exciting, to add more strategy to the game, and could result in some interesting finishes because of that rule. So I'm not opposed to that either, but I don't like the idea of somebody starting on second base. I mean, we don't let people start in field goal range in football. I mean, that's essentially what it is. I mean, you're in field goal range, basically.
They do in college, yeah.
Yeah, in college. But, yeah, that's different, though. You can't trust a college kicker.
That's very true. So, real quickly, do you want to do the opening day lines, or do you just want to talk about futures?
So, I mean, I went into everything in regards to like what I was looking at. So first thing first, when you're betting baseball, obviously you want to check the weather on the day that you're betting, just because if the game's going to potentially be rained out, you don't really want to put money on it. Also, you have to be aware of rain delays and things like that, because it will affect your starting pitchers. So, you know, just to keep it very basic, if you're just getting into baseball gambling, there are generally options on most online sports books where you can select action. So action means that you're going to play whatever you pick no matter what. So if we're doing Thursday's game, Yankees versus Nationals, the starters, projected starters, are Gerrit Cole and Max Scherzer. If you select New York Yankees to win it and you select action, that means even if Gerrit Cole doesn't start, you're on tab for the Yankees to win. If you just want to play the Yankees because you like Gerrit Cole and you want to bet behind Gerrit Cole, then you can generally click on the action and it'll give you a drop down menu and you could select Garrett Cole slash action, which would mean you would take Garrett Cole versus any other Nationals pitcher in case Max Scherzer pitches. Now, if you're looking to, I don't know why anybody would, but if you're looking just to go against Max Scherzer, you can do Garrett Cole slash Max Scherzer and place your bet then. So if either one of those guys happens to scratch, then that bet would receive no action. Now, why this is even more important nowadays is because of the COVID-19 situation, and quite honestly, what I think is the absolute worst rollout of a plan of any major sport that I've seen so far. It's actually very disappointing.
Have you seen odds anywhere of whether or not the baseball season will finish or not?
I was looking for that, actually, because I was going to take it to not finish for the simple fact that, listen, we're not even going into a political aspect. COVID-19 is real, all right? I know it's real because I know people who've had it and things like that. So whether people think it's real or a hoax or whatever, I'm not.
If you think it's a hoax at this point, yeah, you're a moron. Yeah,
exactly. So I know it's real, 100% real. I also know it's 100% real because Freddie Freeman got it, and Freddie Freeman is my favorite player, and he's on my favorite team. And he had 104.5 degree temperature, and he, his own words said he was praying, you know, for his life. And that's pretty serious. Now, obviously, he didn't die, and the mortality percentage is very low. I get all that. But it doesn't matter in the aspect of, if somebody contracts COVID and they spread it to teammates, people are going to have to sit out, and there's only 60 games, you know? So you want to make sure you take these action bets and you pick specific starters, because if Clayton Kershaw's on the mound, man, and typically I bet behind Clayton Kershaw a lot, and for some reason he catches a fever or he got exposed and they scratch him last minute, you're going to be pretty much selling your house at some point, because you're going to lose a lot of money that way. So keep in mind, MLB, the reason why I said the plan is awful, they're leaving it up to teams. They're still traveling as normal. They're going from city to city as normal. And we already know there are obvious hot spots in our country. I was going to say state.
There's more hot spots.
But there's hot spots all over the country.
I was going to say.
And you got teams from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast. They're going to have layovers. It's just too many variables. They don't have curfews. They don't have restrictions to where they can go. They don't have, there's no bubble. No bubble regulations whatsoever.
It's going to be a mess.
Yeah, it might not start out that way, but I guarantee it's going to be awful. The testing that they're going to do is flawed. You got one testing site in Utah, in Salt Lake City, Utah, for the entire league. They're supposed to test, and they're supposed to do it like every couple days or something like that. They're going to play 60 games in 66 days. It ain't going to finish. There's no way. There's no way.
And they're playing 60 games in 66 days? I didn't know that.
That's what I read. I had to double check, but I mean, I know it's 60 games, and they're not trying to extend the season, so
I guess that's true.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah,
because they're gonna do August and September, and then they got playoffs in October. So yeah, that's rough. And another thing too, in talking about baseball, and I'm not trying to sound pessimistic. I'm a gambler through and through, so I'm going to bet regardless. so don't think that me being negative towards the restart is me saying don't bet it. Bet at your risk. You need to know what you're risking here. If somebody strains an oblique, they're typically out for a while, man. And we've seen oblique injuries keep people out for months during a full season. You only got 2 months. So Anthony Rendon right now is nursing an oblique injury, and he's playing for the Angels. He's a good hitter. He's a solid hitter, and he's going to really anchor that lineup, which is pretty historically they were kind of top heavy on the left side outside of Mike Trout and the occasional Pujols sighting. But Rendon was supposed to anchor this lineup, and he's probably not going to be ready for opening day. And depending on the oblique injury, because those are sometimes nagging, he might not play until next month or 20, 30 games in. You have to keep that in mind. So with that being said, on my futures, I put an emphasis on people that I thought had strong pitching, because there's only 60 games, and these guys are going to pretty much be good to go.
Is that starters and bullpen, or is that
starters in mind to get through the division and win and get into the playoffs. But once we get into playoff baseball, I'll tell everybody my strategy straight up. I always take who I think has the best bullpen. And if in the case of like last year with the Nationals, they didn't necessarily have the best bullpen, but they had two strong starters that you could depend on to win a series. And Scherzer and Strasburg reminded me of Schilling and Randy Johnson. That's exactly the Diamondbacks blueprint when they won their World Series. They had two dominant starters that they could depend on no matter what to get them at least 4 out of 7 or 3 out of 5. So that's okay in those situations if you can find a team like that. But historically speaking, over the last X amount of years that I can think of that I've been betting baseball, strong bullpens win. Strong bullpens win. And that might get thrown out the window. I'll have to let you guys know, obviously, 2 months down the road, for the simple fact that a lot of people who would have 240 innings on their arms are probably not going to have that much on their arms now. So everybody will be kind of fresh come playoffs. But to talk about Thursday's game, Yankees Nationals, the stadium obviously favors the Yankee hitters. I mean, anybody that follows baseball knows that. Yankees health is always a concern. There's obviously no starting lineup out yet, but I would assume it'll have Sanchez, Judge, Stanton, Torres, LeMahieu, all the guys that we saw last year. They're very, very solid lineup. And then you got the Nationals with Max Scherzer on the mound. He's a dog. He's very familiar with the Yankees, very familiar with pitching in Yankee Stadium. Their lineup might be a little different because Anthony Rendon was a big piece of that middle of the lineup, but they still got Juan Soto, who's an absolute monster. I expect some regression from Soto this year, and I think people are going to throw him off speed a little bit more and a little bit earlier in counts to kind of get him to chase a little. And then he's also got added pressure, and I think he'd be 22 this year, but he's got added pressure with being the guy. Because there's no Harper, there's no Rendon. I mean, he's now the face of their offense. But he's got support in Trey Turner. Their defense is always going to be a tad bit shaky because it's the Nationals. The over-under right now is 7.5. I mean, we're talking first game. You got two aces on the mound, two bona fide aces on the mound. 7.5 is a lot. I think that's a lot. I would probably take the under here. Now, the thing about Yankee Stadium, and I will warn you, the Yankees can cover 7.5 in a heartbeat if somebody is off. Max Scherzer is very dependent on his power pitching right now. That doesn't bode well for him against a power hitting team like the Yankees. They love fastballs, and I haven't seen a team or a pitcher out fastball them other than my guy Justin Verlander. He's done it a couple times, but for the most part, finesse pitching is what beats the Yankees. Max has got a mean slider. Pay attention to whether or not that's on early. If it's not on early, then you probably want to take a live bet on some Yankee runs because they will tag that fastball in the heartbeat. Top to bottom, that lineup can all hit fastballs. I like the Yankees to win. Right now it's -155, so it's a little juicy, but that's what you get on money lines a lot of time in baseball. You could parlay the Yankees and the Dodgers and make a tad bit, a little profit. If you're really looking for a mode of attack, I would wait to see what the run line is for the Yankees side. Because if anything, if they don't get the Scherzer, but they can get him out of the game early, Nationals bullpen is still kind of iffy early on in the season. And this is historically speaking, they usually have like, Their bullpens are usually shaky, especially around the middle relief area. And they probably got some young guys on the roster they're going to try to get some reps to, too. That would be a situation where the Yankees can take advantage of them. And typically, the Yankees bullpen is phenomenal. And that's the nicest way I can say it. I was about to curse. I had to cut myself off. But the Yankees bullpen is phenomenal. They're the real deal. So usually with Yankee games, when they play other aces, if they don't get to him early, they get to the middle bullpen and they win late. So there's second half props that you can take. A second half in baseball is anything after the fifth inning. So from the start of the sixth inning all the way to the end of the game, if they go into extras, that obviously counts. But I don't know how they're going to do that because of the rule change this year. If somebody's starting at second, if that will, if they'll just cut it off. But either way, first half of the first five innings is your first half bet for baseball. And then the second half would be from the sixth inning to the end. So if you're betting from the sixth inning to the end, you're betting on the bullpens. If you're going to bet on the bullpens, I'm not going to lie, the Yankees bullpen is going to be very profitable. Very, very profitable. They got Britton. They got Chapman. They've got other guys that honestly you would be like, where did this dude come from? Because I mean, they just got some arms in the back of that bullpen, but it's anchored by Britton and Chapman. And if you don't know who Britton is, Britton was a closer who was so good at one point he was in the conversation for MVP when he played for the Orioles, and our guy Buck Showalter decided not to pitch him in a winner-take-all game against the Blue Jays, and he put out Ubaldo Jimenez, and I'll never forget it. And thus, the legend of Jose Bautista happened. So there you go.
Thanks for that, just, Buck.
Yeah, just a little fun fact. So the Yankees game, like I said, if you're backing Gerrit Cole, you're doing pretty good. I mean, I think he's the real deal. I have some questions about his spin rate and other little things about his pitching when he was in Houston. But, I mean, it is what it is. Charlie Morton left Houston, and he was still amazing. So I don't expect anything less out of Gerrit Cole. They paid a lot of money for him. So they're going to want to see some production. And he's got run support galore. In the second game, Cueto going up against Kershaw. I don't know how much Kershaw has left, but the Giants are not that good this year. They're definitely in a rebuilding phase. I hate the NL West with all my heart, but the Dodgers are just so good. In fact, when ESPN put out their little like writer's review for who's going to win the division, the Dodgers was the only team that got all 32 votes.
They got 18 of 32 World Series picks.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, and they are good. On paper, they are absolutely awesome. And I've jokingly called them the Yankees of the West. Like, that's, I mean, they've got
without the titles.
Yeah, without the titles, they got the money, they spent it, they got really good foundation of young guys that came in, like my boy Bellinger, and then the shortstop Seager. They got a couple good young guys there. I wish they had kept Jock Peterson, but they didn't. I understand. They got Mookie Betts in there now. He's got a lot of hype behind him and well worth it. At one point, Mookie Betts, from a sabermetric standpoint, was on pace to almost challenge Mike Trout in an MVP year. Obviously, he didn't get there, but still, he's got a very high ceiling and he's a really good baseball player. And he gives them balance because they were very strong on the left side of the plate. And now they have a solid right-handed hitter. One thing about the Dodgers that you can throw out the window are some of the split stats. Those lefties hit left-handed pitching. It's not something that you see often in baseball today. Even when people shifting, like Bellinger, you might as well not even shift. He can go opposite with that. Corey Seager can stretch across the plate and still hit it out opposite field or go with the pitches. They're very talented. And then they got a solid right-handed hitter in like Justin Turner, and then they just added Mookie Betts. So they've got the talent, man, in that batting lineup, and everybody's really, really, really hype, and obviously rightfully picking them to be favorite to win the World Series. I don't expect them to have any trouble with the Giants. I just don't think the Giants have the offense to really challenge them. They are familiar with Clayton Kershaw, but again, the team's just not that good, man. I would look into taking the spread. Spreads on baseball are a run and a half, so you're expecting the team to win by at least two. I have concerns with the Dodgers bullpen as the season goes on, but starting out first game, things like that, I'm not too concerned. So I like Dodgers on the spread, and I like the Yankees on the money line. Looking to look at the Yankees second half play to bet on their bullpen. and then Dodgers. Cueto, I mean, he's got a funky delivery and everything, but he's really not anything special right now. I would probably take a look at the Dodgers run line. And as always, check the weather. Usually in L.A., they don't have to worry about it. But in Washington, they have pop-up showers. I use Kevin Roth from Roto Grinders. He works for Weather Channel. You can follow him on Twitter. Really good guy to follow for up-to-date information on the weather. He'll also show you which way the wind's blowing, which is important in some stadiums. And then he'll also show you statistics and run analysis on the weather conditions for that particular day. So, it can get really, really advanced. You can play about the numbers. You can play about the feel. I like to listen to baseball on the radio when I'm working. Just with it in the background, and that's how I pick up a lot of tidbit information. All the people who do the radio broadcasts are very, very knowledgeable on the game and the nuances of situations and players. And you'll find all kind of helpful information by listening to the broadcast on the radio. So if you're a gambler or you're thinking about getting into it, I would start with radio listening, honestly. And you can do that through the MLB app. So, yeah, I talked a lot. I'm sorry. You guys can slow it down and go
you
back.
You do not ever have to apologize, bro.
Yeah, it's a lot. Baseball is very, very intricate. It's a lot to get into. And you can overthink it really easily. But again, it's one of those opportunities where if you're a numbers guy and you're a nerd, you can definitely follow those numbers. I've had streaks like a couple years back. I wish Corey was on here. He'll tell you. He was telling me on a lot of games where we were taking – certain teams because they could hit certain like pitching. So we were targeting teams who were really good at hitting left-handed pitching in certain stadiums and things like that. And I mean, it was super profitable. I made almost $7,000 in a month off the Toronto Blue Jays when they had Jose Bautista, Encarnacion, and Josh Donaldson that year that they made
Thank
that little
Buck Showalter.
Yeah, that and they got beat up by the Rangers, which was funny. But again, there was so much money made off of that. And another team who is really good, if you like numbers and you like to just play by the numbers, Oakland Athletics, very profitable team last year, through and through, and they're pretty solid this year. So I did take the liberty of going through some of the bets that I thought were good for futures. And I went to my bookie. You know, we use my bookie, or typically use my bookie, because it's our sponsor in IBN. But I started with make the playoff bets. The Braves are plus 105 right now to make the playoffs, and then minus 135 not to make the playoffs. I'm an Atlanta fan, but I'm also an Atlanta realist. I really don't see how we don't make the playoffs if we're healthy. I mean, if we don't win the division outright, we'll definitely be in the wild card hunt. I would say if we play 60 games, we got to win at least 42 to 45. I mean, the team's pretty good, and I expect them to pick up where they left off. So I like that bet. I like the Padres not to make the playoffs, although it is a little bit risky. I have a feeling that the Padres won't win enough to make the wild card. So I think what you're going to see is Dodgers will win their division. The Braves or Nationals will win our division. And then you're going to have that same scenario that we always get. Two teams out the Central, and then odd man out of the NL East. We'll get that other wild card spot. We haven't seen two teams come out of the West since the Giants pretty much got unhealthy. So back in the day when they were halfway decent, they were winning a World Series every even year. Yeah, we would see two teams, but right now it's just not a strong division. And I think the Padres are a couple years away from where they need to be. For divisional. The Braves are plus 175 to win the East. I like them. That's the favorite odds. It's pretty generous, too. But if you are feeling like the Nationals could bounce back, and I say bounce back because they don't have Rendon, but if you feel like they can make a run, They're plus 250. The Phillies, obviously, loaded, talented team. The pitching is a little shaky, but again, the talent is there. They're plus 375. And then the NL Central, I think, will be the most interesting division. I took the Cincinnati Reds at plus 240 as a sneaky pick to make it to the playoffs. I like the additions of Moustakas and Castellanos, but their rotation is really, really good, man. Top to bottom, actually. I think their fifth in the rotation was like their second or third last year. So it's not like he's a scrub. So I like them. They play. I hate to say it like this, but they play baseball the right way, basically. They take what you give them. If they get a pitch that they like, they'll definitely swing out their shoes and make it count. But they're okay with playing an ugly defensive small ball game. And they don't do a whole lot of shifting and things like that, but they've got a really good defensive team. Joey Votto is one of the more consistent contributors in the league, and he's a technician at the plate himself. They will battle in counts. They'll make people have to consider, you know, their pitch counts and things like that. So even when they were really awful last year, after they traded for Trevor Bauer, you could kind of see that they had some fight in them, and it was kind of a different Reds team. So they're coming in with some swag this year. So I like that. For the American League MVP, Mike Trout's favorite at plus 110. I don't even know who you would go for other than Trout. Trout had some interesting comments preseason, so I don't know if he's gonna actually be the MVP. So I don't know who to pick out there. I'm not even gonna lie. It's up in the air for me. Matt Chapman might be one. He plays for the Athletics. He's pretty solid. Somebody that some people might let go under the radar. Francisco Lindor, obviously one of the better shortstops. If the Indians make the playoffs, he'll be a big reason why. So you can look at that too. And then for the Cy Young in the AL, I went with two pitchers from the Rays, Tyler Glasnow, and my main man, Blake Snell. So I think one of them will be in contention. They're 9-1. If you haven't seen Glasnow pitch, man, if he didn't get hurt last year, he probably would have been in the contention for Cy Young last year. He's really, really good. Jack Flaherty was my National League Cy Young pick. He plays for the Cardinals, really solid pitcher. Young guy, has a good repertoire and likes to keep the ball on the ground, which I think will really help keep his ERA down. And the Cardinals play really good defense behind him. So these are guys that I like to pick at their value. Not necessarily who I think will win, but at the value that they have right now, I'm okay with taking that early on. I did hit a 8-1 on Jacob DeGrom the year before last when he won it, so I'm not afraid to take that pick. And then my favorite prop, does Fauci first pitch bounce to home plate? We got odds on that too, Keith. So yeah, I'm not playing that for real, but yeah, that is an actual prop out there. But either way, again, baseball, for as long as it lasts, with the new changes and things like that, universal DH, it should be interesting. Universal DH will sway run lines, so keep that in mind. But I'm excited to see baseball because I like baseball, but I'm not excited to see that they didn't have a real plan for COVID.
It's pretty sad, especially when you look at the other leagues that have done, I mean, as best as you can in these circumstances, seem to have really put the players, you know, safety first, and not just the players, the entire organizations. So before we get out of here, let's do the 3M Open preview. The PGA Tour heads to the TPC Twin Cities this week for the 2023 3M Open. You will remember last year, it was a very exciting event. It was the first year at this venue. Matthew Wolf notched his first victory less than a month after turning pro. He was 21 under par. He beat out Colin Morikawa and Bryson DeChambeau with an eagle on the last hole.
Sick Wolf, shot.
Who played it up. You know what?
I said it was a sick shot.
Oh, it was. The putt he was in, too, about halfway there. Yep. Wolf, who played at Oklahoma State, joined Ben Crenshaw and my favorite goat man, Tiger Woods, is the only players to win an NCAA title and a PGA Tour event in the same year. Now, not everything is going to be the same coming into this event. The fairways have been pinched on five holes, including the par five finisher, measuring 596 yards, and bunkers on 10 holes had work done as well. Because the par four first hole is 10 yards shorter, it now tips out at 416, and the par three 17th was reduced by 17, making it 202 yards. So the overall length of the par 71 is 7431. These guys are ridiculous. It's overshadowed by its ease overall. The ninth and second hole at the TPC course ranked 21st and 41st, most difficult of 522 par fours during the 18-19 season, so you definitely need to watch out for that. The primary rough returns at a max height of 3.5 inches, and the greens once again are prepped to run up to 12.5 feet on the stump meter. Now, I will tell you, I don't buy that. The temperature is going to be like scalding hot. They're talking about potentially upper 90s, and then also if they get threats of winds. We saw this last week at Jack's place, and you got to realize that at Memorial, Jack, A, had had the tournament 2 weeks in a row, and B, they had already made the decision that they were going to redo the greens. So he didn't give a damn. He was going to get them as fast as he could because he didn't care what was going to happen to them. This course is not going to be redoing their greens after this event, so unless the temperature drops, and especially if there's any kind of wind, those greens will not be running at 12. I will almost guarantee you there will be players complaining about the speed of the greens if the forecast holds, because that's just what players do. And they're not going to risk losing the greens or drying them out to a situation where they lose control of them by any means. So we won't spend a lot of time going through this because I'm going to tell you, this is the first event this year that the field is not as strong as it was the year before. This is, I think, the weakest field since we've returned. The favorites are Dustin Johnson at 11-1, Tony Finau 14-1, Koepka at 16-1, Fleetwood at 16-1, Casey at 22-1, and Matthew Wolf at 25-1. Alan, is there any of those guys you would give a look at?
Obviously, Wolf in his current form, and then his ability or his familiarity with the course. He's very high on this course, and I still like that shot last year was just so clutch, man. It was awesome. But I would favor Wolf in this scenario just because, like I said, the familiarity. It's not rare that people sometimes win back-to-back years at an event, especially when the event doesn't have such a strong feel. But with this current form right now, I think you have to back them.
I completely agree. And I was going to say, I could also understand someone taking Paul Casey. I wouldn't make that play. But at 22-1, the odds are good enough with this field and his strength in it. I can understand it. Those top four, I love DJ, I love Finau, Koepka, and Fleetwood, but for 16-1 for Fleetwood and Koepka, and 14-1 for Tony, you could get them for 70-1 last week. That's too low of odds. And DJ at 11-1, you know, he missed a cut in his last timeout. I just don't like him. I do really like Matthew Wolf. He will be in one of my picks.
When's the last time Paul Casey won a tournament?
It's been, I believe, 2 years ago. And he has, I will say, and this is what kind of scares me a little bit, I don't want to jinx it, he's one of those guys that it's almost like clockwork, about every 2 years, he will win an event.
All right. I mean, I know he's a solid golfer. I'm just saying, like, if you had to do a tiebreaker, you would probably go with who's the last person you see win. Or
Oh, I would go with Wolf. Before Casey. I understand at 22-1 with this field if you want to take Casey.
And I would say for people who want to back Brooks, man, I would be wary of backing Brooks. There was a report out. I don't know if they said anything about it on the actual live like golf feed, because I was out working, so I didn't get to watch the tournament. I just listened to it on the Sirius radio. But anyway, if Brooks is actually still hurt, because I heard he went to the doctor and the knee didn't look any different and it hasn't gotten any better, and the way his score was looking, the way his score was looking Sunday, I find it hard to believe that he would shoot like what is almost like eight over for the round. I just find it hard to believe that he would shoot like that if he's not really hurt. So I hope he's not trying to fight through it just to show that he's tough. I really would like him to just go ahead and shut it down and get healthy. But at 12-1, I'm staying away from him for sure.
Yeah, and he hasn't looked great the last couple of times out anyway. You know, he had that stretch back. I think it was the first two events he came back where he looked pretty good. In his last couple, he has not. So the only other guys I'm going to even go over for this, because for an event like this, and let me ask you, because you're still the expert and I'm learning, but I'm going to take maybe four or five guys in this group that we're about to go through. And obviously, I told you I'm taking Matthew Wolf. But outside of that, I'm not going to go any higher than 71. I understand Matthew Wolf won last week at 100-1. Any guys outside of the 60 to 71 range, I'm going to play like a top 10. Because especially if you look at the top 10s from last year, there was a lot of names that would kind of surprise you in there. And that's where if you feel like you have a guy that, you know, you have a feeling about, or you just want to, you know, make a play because you're getting good odds, I would rather try to get 8-1 or 9-1 on a top 10 than, you know, take a Hail Mary for a 90, 80-1 or 120-1 at this field.
Yeah, I mean, in tournaments like this, I don't know if we were doing the podcast early, like the very first couple of tournaments, but like just shoot your shot, man. I mean, you ain't got nothing to lose in these small fields. You ain't got nothing to lose, man. And then too, I'm going to be home this weekend with my son. So I'm eager to watch golf because especially like with me having like a bad week last week, I want to get back and I want to watch every single round, watch every single golfer I can watch so I can kind of update my data, because obviously something's a little off if I'm having like the week that I had last week. So it might be time for me to update some stuff and see who's trending up. Like Henrik Norlander, he had a great tournament last week, considering how difficult it was.
Two great tournaments.
Yeah, and he's sitting at 55-1. I want to see if he can keep it going, because the tournaments are going to get harder with, like, I think we got some WGCs coming up and things like that. His odds will be astronomical in the bigger tournaments, so that leaves me room for like prop bets and things like that. So you want to also keep in mind of who's playing well, because what I have been doing, and it's been working out for me too, is taking round-by-round matchups. So like Harris English and Lucas Glover are in the group together. I'm going to take Harris English to cover by half a stroke, you know, things like that. It's kind of helped with some of the losses that I've had like last week. And you can find some good value in some of those things. So again, we're always searching for value, always looking to update, always looking to learn. I'm excited for this weekend.
Absolutely. Real quick, let's go through these guys from 30 to 60, because I just want to get your thoughts on who you like out of this group. You've got Russell Henley and Harris English at 33-1, Lucas Glover at 35-1, Eric Van Ruin at 35-1. You've got Sam Burns at 45-1, Luke List at 50-1, Doc Redman at 50-1, Brian Harman, Henrik Norlander, Ryan Moore at 60-1, Patrick Rogers at 66-1. Do any of those guys stand out to you?
Lucas Glover has a lot of quotes about the course, so I would think he likes it. I would say Lucas stands out. I always play Harris English for some reason.
I knew you were going to say that.
But he's a solid guy.
No, he's played. He's had, I believe I read today, 9 top 20 this season.
I was going to say, yeah. And I usually play him on props, if anything, especially in these small fields. Like, he's a pretty solid golfer to you know, land. Like,
and you need to remember, 9 top 20s in a, you know, we missed 3 months of golf. So
yeah,
that's a really impressive season.
At one point, he was leading the PGA Tour in top 10s. So, I like Harris English for prop play. Funny fact, Eric Van Rooyen, I guess he's familiar with the course because he's played golf in Minnesota.
Yeah, he went to University of Minnesota.
He went to University of Minnesota. He married somebody from Minnesota, and his in-laws' house is like 20, 30 minutes from the course. So if you're looking for some kind of angle with somebody that's familiar, I can tell you on the Bent Poana greens, he's been pretty solid. Matter of fact, he hit our radar on Bent Poana.
Well, I was going to say, though, that was also the tournament where we got all in on Matthew Naismith for a lot of similar reasons, and he screws.
Yeah. and it happens. I was going to say he was competing with Patrick Reed and Bryson in that tournament we won when we picked Patrick Reed.
Well, Ruben's playing really well too.
Yeah. So I would keep an eye on him. Now I would, like I said last week, he kind of let me down just one stroke off of a 7-1. But that's the thing about golf. I mean, guys who play golf, like you play golf, you know, you can't just quit on somebody after one tournament. Like, things just happen.
Well, especially last week. That's what I was going to tell you. You can't beat yourself up with those conditions, because any of the – you just look at the guys and the scores that they shot. I mean, you're just a little bit off. You're going to be like 5-6 over at a course like that. I don't really – Memorial, the way it played last week, I'd look at like a U.S. Open. Like, shit happens.
Yeah, and I was going to say just that too. Like, it happens, man. But, yeah, those three names that I talked about, Glover, English, and Roy.
What about Bubba at 40-1? Because I feel like that – I know his form's not great since we've restarted, but this is a course that should set up pretty well for Bubba. You know, guys that hit it a long way have had a lot of success here, or at least they did last year. And just – I feel like Bubba is down, you know what, the 12th or 13th best odds. And no offense to Harris English or Russell Henley or Lucas Glover or even Matthew Wolf, Paul Casey, Tommy Fleetwood, Tony Finau, only Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka do I trust more to win a tournament, because Bubba's won a bunch of tournaments. All these other guys, Finau hasn't won one. Fleetwood hasn't won one. Casey hasn't won in over 2 years. Wolf obviously won the last one. Glover hasn't won in forever. Henley hasn't won in forever. English hasn't won in forever. And you're getting Bubba at 40-1. I really like those odds.
Yeah, Bubba's going to win one eventually. The more he plays, the more confident I am that eventually he's gonna hit his stride and win a tournament. So I think he did okay last week. I can't remember I think at one point he was having a good day. But like you said, things had changed so much. And like I said, I was listening to it on the radio. They wasn't talking about him on the radio. So sometimes – just because they're not talking about it doesn't mean he didn't necessarily have a solid week. Sometimes they just follow, you know, the groups. And Ron was playing so well that I don't think they had any choice but to talk about him. So I don't mind Bubba in this situation. Again, it's a small field. It would be the same odds. I pretty much carried Dustin Johnson when he won the tournament with a similar small field. And Bubba's in better form. And I support Bubba more than I support DJ right now. If you want to take a chance on that, again, that's a situation and a scenario that I'm not going to say you're wrong in, because you got a guy who's in decent form and he's due to win. He's going to win eventually. It's just a matter of which tournament, but he's playing golf at a pace that I haven't seen him play in a while, as far as like tournament after tournament after tournament. And so I feel like the more he plays, the more likely he's going to hit his stride and get his streak going.
All right, so let's go over my picks real quick, and then if you want to share some, you can, or if you just want to, you know, either agree or make fun of my picks, you can. This week I'm only doing $175 worth of plays. If you remember, I lost $50 in the last event doing $200, so we're going to go down a little bit and try to catch up. I got Sam Burns at $15 at 45-1. He finished seventh here last year, so obviously he likes this course. And his last three starts on tour have all been top 30s, so I like that. We just talked about Bubba. I don't have to say that. I'm doing $25, 40-1 for Bubba. I'm going to throw $10 on Henrik Norlander. His last three starts, he finished 6th, 12th, and 31st. They are talking about him a lot on the PGA Tour, about just how talented this guy is. So, you know, 60-1, I like that again, because if you look at this field, it's not that strong. Lucas Glover, I got $25 on 35-1. Lucas also finished 7th last year at this event, and he has had a top 30 in every event since he's resumed. Lucas Glover is a guy that is made for this kind of golf course, where actually if you look at the numbers last year, the premium was believe it or not, on ball striking and more on approach to the greens than it was driving, even though so much was made out of the bombers. And then I'm going to have to put $25 on Matthew Wolff at 25-1. He's the defending champ. He finished 22nd last week with a great Sunday, and he was just runner-up 3 weeks ago. So I got to do that. And then I have five top 10 plays. I got Ben Martin, $5 at plus 900. He's had a top 10 in two of his last three starts. I put $10 on Troy Merritt at plus 600. He's finished seventh last year as well. There's a bunch of guys that finished seventh. And he had an 8th and a 22nd before Memorial last week. Again, I don't really count Memorial, so he's in good form. He played well last year. I'm putting $20 on Lucas Glover to top 10 at plus 250. I don't need to go back over that. And then I got $10 on Christopher Ventura at plus 800. He's had two top 10s in his last four starts. Granted, they were not on the PGA Tour, but he is one of the young studs from Europe that is coming over. They say he's coming. He's got a ton of talent. You're getting 8-1 odds on a top 10 in the weak field. Give me that. And then the last one is just, honestly, I'm going to bet on this young man until he pays off. Sahith Thegila. I'm going to put $5. He is plus 2,000, 20-1. He is a young player. He was one of the best college players in the country. 2 years ago, he injured himself, took some time off. This is his second PGA career start. He just won on a mini tour last week. He's playing on a sponsor's exemption. This kid has got all world talent, and at 20-1 for a top 10, why not? He's a really good ball striker. We'll see what happens. You hate or love any of those plays?
Nah, I'm not gonna ever downplay that sponsor exemption crap anymore. Thanks to was it Nick Lashley that one time?
Yeah,
he didn't even know he was gonna play, and he came in and won. So yeah, I'm never gonna down.
Oh, Lockie, sorry, Nick Lashley.
Yeah, Lockie. Yeah, God, that hurt my heart, man. That one tournament. I was like, who is this guy? I mean we kind of talked about Glover, Wolf, Norlander, like Bubba, like those are all solid picks, man. Nothing wrong with that approach. Sam Burns is also another solid pick.
He was on my list, and I took him.
He scores a lot in these tournaments, but he does it like generally early when nobody's like looking. Like he's always the guy that I'm like, what? Who is this dude? Is seven under already? At seven under through like five holes, like something crazy. And then for some reason he just fades. I don't know why.
He's got to learn to win. A lot of those young guys go through that.
Yeah, so it's fine. Again, at some point one of these dudes is gonna catch on. I do like the Merritt play because I had Troy Merritt in 3M. Really well. So 3M. is near and dear to me because last year at this
110,
time
right was he 110-1?
Yeah, so I was gonna make bets at this time last year, and then my mom had just got news that she was completely cancer free, so we went out to celebrate, and I missed the start of the tournament, but I did a DraftKings lineup, just willy-nilly DraftKings lineup. And I took Troy Merritt, and Troy Merritt actually won me $50. And that's the most I've ever won in a DraftKings lineup because he was scoring so much, and I don't think anybody else had him. And every time I hear 3M, I ended up going back and live betting Wolf at 7-1, and I won that too. So it ended up being a pretty profitable tournament for me. But I don't have any problems with any of your picks, even the sponsor exemption guy. I don't
Sahith
even
see Thegila.
Yeah, I'm looking for him. I really was looking for him on the my bookie thing, and I can't even find him. So
he was at like I want to get this correct. I believe he was 250-1 on the website I was looking at to win.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, man. Those young guys, especially coming out of college, like these are the tournaments where they somehow find a way to really show up. I think Nick Gordon or Russell Gordon, whatever his name is. Will Gordon. There you go. Will Gordon. That's how he pretty much popped up. I mean,
yep, the Sea Allen last year.
Yeah. Like people were kind of talking about him that were in the know with golf, but I mean, he's just another college kid, and he almost hit the board at like 90-1. So, definitely, like I said, tournaments like this, shoot your shot. Nothing wrong with it. It will be high scoring. So you just want to make sure you get guys who can score. There is a risk for big numbers. We didn't talk about that too much. There is a risk because there's water in play on a lot of holes, but typically people can just take the water out of play with a good drive.
I am interested to see, though, that they said, you know, they made a point. I saw it in two different places that the primary rough returns at a max height of 3.5 inches. That's where you start to get into where guys have a hard time controlling, you know, that shot. That's a primary rough. We're not even talking about the rough outside of the primary rough, which obviously is going to be really thick. It just didn't seem like it was that last year. I don't think it'll make a big difference unless the wind really blows. But, you know, we'll have to see, because they also said they shortened some of the fairways or thinned them out.
Well, the wind should blow if we're talking Minnesota and we're talking about the wind blowing and probably rainy at some point. So the elements should come into play. There are some stats out there for people who are interested on guys who can how they play in like windy conditions or wet conditions. I'm going to go back to my old faithful and just say the premium is ball striking. It really is like the go-to. If you can't figure out how somebody's playing and the weather might be a problem, go with ball striking. Find you a good ball striker. Tony Finau, good ball striker. Paul Casey, good ball striker. You know, like those. That's why those guys are typically up there. Tommy Fleetwood is a good ball striker. I wouldn't take him because he's just fresh. He's just getting back to the PGA Tour. But again, these are guys who are premium ball strikers. I even think Doc Redman's not a bad ball
that's
striker.
That's what I look in a lot of the prop plays, and something I've learned from you is like if I'm looking at top 10s and top 20s, I'm looking for a guy with good odds that I know he's going to hit the ball really well tee to green. If he has a good putting week, you're golden. They sometimes they'll hit the ball so well they won't even have a good putting week, and you still end up hitting the prop. So I can't, you know, agree with that point enough. I think it really is something you should look at, especially when you're filling out like your prop lineups.
For sure. But there's nothing wrong with your picks. I haven't went through my picks yet because I spent a lot of time on baseball.
Oh, we know. We heard that earlier.
And then I got a I've had a pretty good run on soccer too, which we don't really talk about it much. And Premier League's pretty much over, but definitely as we continue the podcast when the Premier League starts back up, I'm gonna do the Premier League just because it comes on TV, people can see it. I don't know if a lot of people are comfortable with betting La Liga and Serie A. If they can't see it.
You can't pronounce it. You shouldn't bet on it typically.
Well, I can't pronounce any of that stuff.
Yeah, but you actually look at that stuff. I'm just saying, you know, these people listening, you know, they don't do the research you do. If you can't pronounce it, it's probably a good idea. You shouldn't bet on it.
I've even gotten I found a Reddit stream platform, and somehow somebody gave me a link on one of the message boards and it shows me all the soccer matches. So I've got it bookmarked on my work laptop. So I definitely make sure I continue to follow it. But yeah, Premier League, like Sunday is relegation day. So if you're looking to at least see what it's all about,
you're gonna
see people actually playing hard though. It should be interesting. They had some drama today because one team they were tied on the goals and freaking they played Man City and Man City beat them like 4-0, and then it just set up this like chaos scenario now. So Sunday should be really interesting. I watch it and then switch back to golf. But yeah, I'll do Premier League. We got NBA coming up, we got WNBA coming up. People might laugh. WNBA was my moneymaker. Oh my god, it's my moneymaker. The only issue I have is that I don't know how these people are going to play because a lot of the big names in the WNBA are sitting out due to wanting to support protests or just health needs. They're not playing, so that's going to be interesting. I want to apologize to people that were on the Zion Williamson thread. I got ahead of myself. The NBA doesn't start till next week.
I thought it was just Thursday too.
Yeah, man. I should know. I'm doing the NBA podcast. I should know. But yeah, I got ahead of myself because I saw the line and I was like so happy. Like I know they're not thinking they're gonna win without Zion, but he'll be back before then. So I'm not even gonna entertain that. And then NFL is not going to do preseason. I think that's big news, because how does that affect roster spots? I don't know. They had 95 positive COVID tests, but then apparently somebody's dyslexic. It was supposed to be 59. So they just put that out there today, too. So I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I'm a little concerned with after seeing how MLB rolled out their plan. At least NFL players are more open about it and speaking out against the idea that there's no plan in place or there's no testing or things like that. So NFL's trying to put something in place pretty quickly, and I'm hoping it'll be better than what we see with baseball.
I will say, to the NFL's credit, you know, or in their defense, like I should say, you know, I think they thought we would have this a lot more under control as a country. Yeah. By the time they had to start worrying about this, and it's gone the other way. And granted, they need to get their butt in gear, but the NFL is kind of like the NBA. There's too much money involved. And, you know, for, 17 games, it's going to happen. It's college football. I don't think there's any way there's going to be a season.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get a college football season. I'm not even anticipating it or banking it. My co-host for the college football podcast, we've already talked about how we're probably not going to be able to do one this year. I will say, too, MLB adopted the Bundesliga, which is the German soccer league. It kind of adopted their plan, but it's like a bootleg version. So the Bundesliga operated without a bubble. But in Germany, they had already kind of flattened the curve. So Bundesliga rolled out this plan. They had a detailed plan on COVID. And then they had a very detailed plan on COVID prevention for families and friends who were going to interact with the athletes. Baseball, I got this from a Washington Post article. Baseball basically just put in a paragraph, and it was so vague, man. It's really concerning, because again, I'm honestly not as worried about somebody dying from it as I'm worried about people just getting infected and then infecting their families and things like that. And it just takes one death. It really just takes one death. And you know, somebody had poetically put it out. If I gave you 100 apples and told you that one of them could kill you, would you eat an apple? And I'm like, no, you know. And that's essentially what we're saying with the COVID situation. Like, you got all these athletes, they're going from city to city, and they're still hanging out with their families and things like that. And it's just sad, man. I saw an interview today with the Tampa Bay Rays. You had two of the players with mask on and the coach in the middle with no mask on. What good does that do? You know? So I'm hoping baseball stays. If not, we'll always have golf still. And if worst case scenario, I survive 2 months with just horse racing, I can always go back.
Well, we don't want to do that. Before we get out of here, I just want to let you know that we had two podcasts from Team Turnbuckle this week. Me and Sam Howe, which I always thought was Huff, Howe did a podcast on the anniversary of CM Punk's win in 2011, which was a really big deal in wrestling. And then me and Ron L just dropped a podcast today that was recapping Extreme Rules and then doing the week of the shows from AEW, NXT, and Raw. So please check that out. Have you recorded the Ringer NBA, or is that tomorrow?
No, we're going to do NBA next week, because it was like a 2 week wait. So we'll probably be doing NBA next Monday. We'll talk a little bit about the gambling aspect, obviously, but more so just to cover NBA news and things like that.
Well, I'll call in and complain about I can't watch my Hawks the rest of the season. And we got those fly ass new uniforms, man. I'm ready to see them. I'm ready to see Capella. And it kind of stinks. I mean, I understand why they had to do it, but it is kind of bummer that the NBA is going to come back, even with a small, you know, sprint of the regular season, and your team's not in it. But if you don't have anything else, we'll get out of here.
Nah, man, I'm good. Nice talking to you.
You know, I always enjoy it, buddy. I appreciate the knowledge. And this has been Keith and Alan, a.k.a. Ivy Yeezus, for another edition of the Backdoor Cover. We'll see you guys soon.